Okay.
All right. Denise, don't you love doing radio in the era of Trump? You have to admit.
Well, it never ceases to keep us busy.
There is never a dull moment, folks. I mean, seriously. Just think about today. I mean, we could just literally, he gives us so much.
Mm-hmm.
Do you talk about the fact that today he's going to do it? They're going to do the test for the presidential alert text message that's going out to everybody at 2:18 p.m. And how crazy that is that you would give a serial tweeter that kind of power.
Well, a lot of people I know are talking about turning their phones off. It'll still be there when you come back. But, you know, it kind of just makes me scratch my head a little bit, because this is supposed to be for, like, emergency preparedness. And if you look at our response in Puerto Rico, we don't quite have that down. So I don't think that the equivalent of a nationwide group text is really going to be all that effective until we learn how to, I don't know, manage disasters in two of our territories that are still recovering and yet still expected to be tourist havens.
I'm just saying. Regina Gray says she's changing her number today.
But here's the thing. You can change your
number. You cannot hide from Trump now.
You can't hide.
Oh, man, I love it. I mean, so you got that. You got this incredible story in the New York Times today. 8 pages.
They finally told us in no uncertain terms why he refused to release his tax returns. That's because then we'd find out that self-made is a relative term, and that there's a whole lot more to his finances than meets the eye or even meets other eyes. But there's a podcast, and again, this goes back to my being a perpetual geek, so I, you know, listen to stuff like this. There's a podcast that's coming out of WNYC and ProPublica called Trump Inc., that's been looking at Trump's businesses, who benefits from his time in the White House, his family's place in these businesses, and all these different things. So, you know, some of the stuff that was in the New York Times article, I had already learned about through listening to this particular podcast. But, you know, some of it, you're like, don't you wish we would have had this information back in 2016?
Yeah.
It might have helped people make some different decisions. But then
it would not.
Then again, I was, and this goes back to the podcast, Trump Inc., that I was listening to. I was listening to one of, because I was catching up on it, and one of the episodes was taped the day after Michael Cohen pled guilty and Paul Manafort got convicted for what he got convicted for. And somebody called into the station, because it was a call-in show, and asked, what does this have to do with real life? The fact that he was paying these women off to keep quiet. And I'm like, and see that there's your problem right there.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is right. So, listen, any of these stories this morning about the 45th president, under normal circumstances, would have derailed any presidency. If the story about these taxes had come out on George W. Bush, he would be so humiliated that Barbara would make him resign, his mama. Right? If it came out that Bill Clinton tried to force Stormy Daniels into silence, even after denying it on Air Force One, that he knew anything about this. So we went from his vehement denial of knowing anything about any payoff to, oh, Michael Cohen actually, you know, had a conversation with him about the payoff that's recorded, to, no, he actually, and one of his sons, tried to get her to hush up on his own. That would have killed a presidency. That would have been it. It would have been over. If a president had gone out and attacked a person who has alleged that she was, that she is the victim of an attempted rape, and he mocks her publicly, you know, at the White, you know, as he's leaving the White House, and then mocks her on the campaign trail. Oh, I remember. Oh, I don't remember what size of the house. I never met the guy. That would have destroyed a presidency.
And here's the thing. Why is this man still on the campaign trail? Wait,
and I mean, but this is, listen, this is one day. This is one day. And then to even make, I guess, probably the, maybe one of the greatest hits of yesterday. One that reinforces rape culture. And which says to people, you know, I mean, hey, this is not about rape victims. It's about the persecution of men. I mean, now, if he really wanted to go all in, he would have said it's a scary time for white men in America. That's what he really wanted to say. You know it. That's kind of the dog whistle. But it's for him, he'll stop short of just men. It's a rallying call for all men. Says this is because this, I won't say this is not all men because, you know, you're talking about a lack of due process. Well, come talk to black folk. We have a list that's up to KKK of what you can't do as a result of mostly a lack of due process. So you're not talking about us. But he said yesterday that this is a scary time for young men. Interesting.
And this is coming from the man who wanted to see five young men executed for a rape they did not commit.
Yeah, that now that's a scary time for the Central Park Five. You're right. Oh, boy. So, I mean, again, this is one afternoon. This is one afternoon of news cycles. And I will say again, it doesn't matter. In fact, here's a good place to start. Yesterday's polling came out and said that 54% of Republicans, registered Republicans, in the latest poll have said, even if it is true that Brett Kavanaugh attempted to rape Dr. Christine Blasey Ford while in high school, it doesn't matter to them. He should still be confirmed. Wow. Great message to your daughters. Hey, daddy loves you. But I got to get that Supreme Court seat. Need that so I can control what you do with your body after you get raped. Don't want you going out getting an abortion or anything. Ooh. It's a strange cycle, isn't it? Some serious contradictions at work here. But that 54% of Republicans, men and women, said that it does not matter if he has lied about trying to rape her and it's proven, if it is just, if his priest comes forward and says, yes, Brett came to the confessional and he confessed, Father, forgive me, I have sinned. What is your sin, son? I tried to rape a woman. Give me a few Hail Marys, a couple of Our Fathers. Don't do it again. Thank you, Father. Yes, I'm the priest who took his confession. He did it. Water under the bridge. 54%. Even if he did it, are you guys serious?
Yeah, and I can tell you why they're serious. Because there is a class of men out there who don't 100% believe that rape actually happened.
Excuse me. There are a lot of women in that 54%.
Oh, yeah.
This is not a 54% Republican men.
Oh, no, no. I freely acknowledge that. There are a group of people who actually do not believe that rape actually exists.
Are you
kidding
me?
And the thing is, they have all come out of the woodwork between Cosby and Kavanaugh and all. They have all come out of the woodwork, and you kind of wish that you had enough raid to take care of all of them, and unfortunately you do not.
Yeah.
But, you know, you have this, you know, group of people who believe that sexual assault and rape isn't a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And because they believe it isn't a thing, you know, they're like, oh, well, you know, youthful indiscretion, boys will be boys, and all this other crap. And the thing is, this, you know, if we were talking about a 17-year-old black kid or a 17-year-old Latinx kid or a 17-year-old Asian kid or a 17-year-old kid who was anything other than a nice, genteel WASP from Georgetown Prep, trying him as an adult at 17 would not be a stretch for many of the same people that are making this argument. And that is because the only group of people that is allowed to stay a child until they're 40 or 45 years old, just ask Donald Trump Jr., is white men.
Mm.
And, you know, and not even white women get that privilege. And it blows your mind that you sit here and you listen to them talk about this 17-year-old, oh, he's just a boy. But, okay, Tamir Rice was 12 years old, and he got shot to death.
No due process.
You know, you have all of these, like, young black men who have been shot to death by police who were all under 18, and you have no problem with that. But if it's a 17-year-old white dude getting illegally drunk and you know, somebody finally asked a question that we all should have been asking when this first came out, where were his parents? Because Lord knows if it were a group of, you know, kids of color doing all this wilding out after drinking, that's the first question that anybody would have. Well, where were their parents? Okay, you know, why aren't we asking that here? Why aren't we asking, you know, where was Mr. Kavanaugh with his calendars that he was teaching his son to, you know, keep journals on? Why is it that 17 is only a child when it's not our children?
My God. I'm trying to find Deuteronomy 22, 23, 24. Where's Rabbi Sean when I need him? Rabbi Sean, I need your interpretation on this text. So it says 23, chapter. What is that? Deuteronomy 22. Somebody just posted something that an extremist preacher, Baptist extremist preacher. So this is the text. It says, if a man comes upon a virgin in a town, a girl who is engaged to another man and sleeps with her, take both of them to the town gate and stone them until they die. The girl, because she didn't yell out for help in the town, and the man, because he raped her, violating the fiancé of his neighbor. You must purge the evil from among you. So that text, apparently, there are a lot of other things in there that we don't do anymore, by the way. That text leads a extreme right Baptist preacher to this conclusion. Rape is having sex with a woman while she screams for help. No scream, no rape. But he had his hand on my mouth. Oh, you didn't get that scream out. Sorry. Nothing we can do. Our hands are tied here. Are you serious? This guy's preaching this in a church somewhere? He says, since she did not cry out or stab him, I will not believe her without a film of the event. Yikes. Thanks, Daily Kaz, for bringing this to our attention. Yeah, it's a scary time, all right. Man, you feel like just when he rolls through, you should just play the soundtrack of the theme song to All in the Family. Those were the days.
All I have to say is I am so glad right now that Wawa is having their dollar coffee any size promotion.
He said, he went on, he asked, did she bite his hand? Poke him in the eye? Women know instinctively how to protect their honor. Screaming, shouting, slapping, spitting, slugging, stabbing with a finger, pencil, or a hat pin.
Meanwhile,
Reverend.
Meanwhile, this rapist is cutting, shooting, choking, or otherwise killing you as to silence you.
You wanted it because you didn't scream loud enough.
I've not had enough coffee for these shenanigans. I don't think enough coffee exists. I think if you attached an IV drip to my arm for me to walk through the streets of Philadelphia today with this coffee drip, you know, going directly into my veins, it would not be enough coffee for these shenanigans.
Well, I told you we have great listeners, so thank you, Sandra Fields, for sharing that story. Thank you. So it was an interesting day yesterday. Listen, we got an interesting show lined up for you as well. In a few moments, we'll be speaking to Reverend Greg Holston from Power. Amazon made news yesterday. They heard the criticism, took action, $15 an hour for all their employees, and this impacts Whole Foods because they own Whole Foods now. And that's across the board, seasonal workers, temp workers, everybody at Amazon. $15 an hour, way to lead by example. So that's a step absolutely in the right direction by Jeff Bezos. He'll be on to talk about that. We'll also speak to some authors at 8 o'clock. This is Breast Cancer Awareness Month.
And, yes.
Yeah.
And there's an event happening at the African American Museum on Thursday. It's called The Pink Sister Chronicles. It's a book gala called Perfectly Imperfect, and it's on Thursday at the African American Museum. There's a cocktail reception, book signing, and all of the proceeds are going to benefit breast cancer because this is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. It's also Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and I don't know how I feel about those two concepts being in the same thing because they're kind of apart from each other, and they should each have their own month and not necessarily have to share one, but such is life.
Yeah, well, you know. To the people who put these things together, they're all women. It doesn't matter. It's all, throw it all together. DV, breast cancer, same difference.
But here's
not
the
really,
part.
But yeah,
here's the part that always gets me about Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Mm-hmm. And I know that a lot of our audience is no longer watching the NFL, but when you're engaged to a sports writer, you kind of have to sometimes. But the thing about October is all of a sudden you're going to see the NFL awash in pink. pink sneakers and
you see that at church on Sunday too.
Oh yeah, you're gonna see like, but see, unlike your church, the NFL is filled with guys who occasionally do stuff like choke out their pregnant girlfriends.
Excuse me.
Or beat them down.
Excuse me.
Or my personal favorite, knocking your fiance who went on to become your wife, and I am still trying to figure that one out an elevator with one punch.
Excuse me. I don't think that the NFL has cornered the market. I just read you a quote from a preacher. So in that church, ain't nobody wearing pink. No guys. So it's, very toxic in that place. 8:20, we'll speak to Malcolm Kenyatta about millennials, how to turn millennials out to the polls. We don't typically bring, folk on like that who are running in races, but his is not competitive. So,
And that was kind of what I wanted to ask him about. How do you run for office? And get people out to the polls to get them to vote for other races when you yourself aren't really in anything that's competitive.
Right. And then also, hopefully we'll get a chance to talk to Reverend Kim Dethridge about 8:40 about the Iron Coffin Lady. There's a documentary coming on tonight. I'm not sure if it's nationwide, but we'll be talking to her as well. Listen, man. We've got the person who's going to do the reveal on Friday. Kind of fell in our lap, actually.
And how did it fall in our lap?
You know, so I called asking for a favor. I'm like, well, I got a favor to ask of you.
Oh.
You know?
Bartering, so, I love it.
Yeah, still works. It's Old Testament. Mm-hmm. It's one that we'll keep. So, calling in Friday at 8 a.m., none other than the former mayor of New Orleans, mm-hmm. Nolens. Mm-hmm. He was mayor of Nolens, wasn't he?
Yes, he was.
Head of the National Urban League. It's the Urban League, right?
Mm-hmm.
I always get mixed up with the Urban Affairs Coalition. You know what I mean? Philly, since I've been in Philly, it just throws me. They do a lot of the same things. But
This is the national group that puts out the state of Black America every year.
So what better person to help us make sense of this crazy list than Mark Morial? So Mark Morial will be calling in at 8 o'clock. Hmm. I know it's not one of the people that we threw out on the list, but we'll still work on them at another time. And hopefully we'll also be able to get the president of the NAACP in Lancaster, who led the list, Golfing While Black. So hopefully we can get her to actually do the reveal, kind of tell the story. And have Mark react to it and just kind of break it down what it means to be Black in this moment in America. So I don't think we could get a better person to, I mean, we could, but you know, he's one of the best people to really kind of lay out and put in context how all of these stories that seem to be dissimilar are tied together, this fabric in this network. So he'll be on a Friday, 8 o'clock, and we will reveal. We don't even know yet what KKK is. We've not even gotten there, but trust me, I have faith in America.
Coming.
America, I have so much faith in you that I'm almost certain that you'll probably give us 4 or 5 different things to choose from by Friday. I believe in you. Don't make me look bad and don't let me down. Because we got the guests already lined up. So come on, bad actor. I know you're out there.
Shoot, that may have already happened. We just don't know it yet.
You know the one that we talked, that we never talked about, that happened before we went on with the morning show?
What?
Was the choir in Oakland that had the cops call.
I remember that.
When they were rehearsing.
I remember that.
Your
I
music
was like,
is too loud at rehearsal.
Seriously now?
It's Thursday night. It's kind of what we've been kind of doing this for like 100 years. Yeah, but the neighborhood has changed and you ain't going to be able to do that anymore. You have to close those windows. Tell the drummer, you know, the drummer has to put the little cloth over the drum, the snare. Mute that thing. It's rehearsal. It's bad enough once a week on Sunday, but you ain't gonna be able to do that anymore. That one should have made the list, but that's an old story.
Mm-mm-mm.
Before we go to Reverend Holston, let me go Jeopardy on you. What is the worst performance by a debate moderator in history?
Alex Trebek?
Pretty much. With the governors. I didn't even see it.
No, first of all, we need, and we can do this after, you know, we've talked to Reverend Holston, but at some point we need to address the fact that A, there was only one gubernatorial debate. B, it was sponsored by the Chamber of Commerce, which I have problems with. And C, it was moderated by a game show host.
Who apparently took over the whole thing, and they said it was all about Alex. But, I said, man, Alex just took over the show.
He filibustered. But he's a game show host. What did you expect?
Hey, Wagner, what is the solution to the lack of tax income? Tax fossil fuel.
Yeah, I'll take who thought this was a good idea for 500, Alex.
My man Alex Trebek. Hey, anyway, listen, we have on the line, we got to get Reverend Holston some music. He's on enough. He needs his own music. Reverend Greg Holston, Executive Director of Power, here to talk about some good news for a change. Amazon stepping up to the plate. And of course they could do more, but this is a step in the right direction. I think that most people would agree. Hey, Reverend Greg, welcome back to the program.
Good morning. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
What song do you want? We're going to have to get a theme song for you.
I don't have any idea, man. I'm going to leave that one alone. but it's a nice thought. Nice thought.
Yeah. Hey, well, so listen, were you, what did you feel when you heard the news about Amazon going to $15 an hour for all of their employees, even including the temporary employees and seasonal folk?
First of all, you know, I'm excited for those activists across this country, for union activists, community activists, politicians who finally saw the light themselves. Who have been pushing major corporations and governments to move everyone to $15. Back in 2011, 2012, when the figure was brought up by workers in New York City, the idea first was crazy for people even to think of. From a minimum wage of $7.25 to up to $15. For many, seemed like too big of a jump, and for some, seemed to think that workers did not deserve it. The dialogue and discussion has greatly changed over the last 7 years that has brought $15 now into the mainstream, where every politician, including the mayor of the city of Philadelphia, recently setting a path to have all of city workers, contracted and subcontracted workers, to up to $15 in the city of Philadelphia. And he has now said that this is the bar, still of a low bar, but a bar for all corporations and all governments to meet. And so while I'm excited that Amazon decided to do the right thing, I think they're recognizing that there's a wave and a movement across this country for living wages for all workers, and that nobody who works a 40-hour week should be living in poverty. And they're just meeting that wave. They're accepting that wave. And so we're thankful, but we know who the ones who really are making it possible.
Well, you know what? I'm glad you said that, because I thought about the same thing last night. I said, while Bezos has taken all the credit, the truth is the credit does go to all. I mean, you think about all those marches and actions that we participated in, led by people like 15 Now, Fight for 15, Unite Here, SEIU, 32BJ, all these unions and folk who've really been lifting it. And then, of course, people like Power, Faith in Action across the country. I mean, you know, people don't just wake up saying, yeah, I think I just want to give away some more money. In fact, when reading his comments, he said, we listened to our critics, and they were right.
Yes. Yeah.
That's deep.
And I'm glad for that admission on his part, that he was hearing what was being said. And also, as they decide to pick their headquarters, I'm sure that people are saying across the country, because I'm involved in those op-ed opinions and those discussions, that wherever they're thinking about, people are saying they can't come here. Mm-hmm. Unless they have at least $15 for their workers.
Right.
Hey, we will fight them if they try to come here, if we don't have at least $15 for their workers. So they've heard that statement, and probably some people may have even pulled out of wanting Amazon in there until they made sure that this commitment was made. So I think it's clear that the people have won. This is about the people winning.
Absolutely.
And forcing corporations to do the right thing.
Absolutely. You are 100% right. And I'm going to tell you, and that's why, again, you have to continue to beat the drum that activism matters. People say, well, why show? Yes. Why march? That doesn't do anything. Yes, it doesn't do everything. No, but it does something.
It does something. And recognize, again, this $15 discussion started in 2011, 2012
mm-hmm.
in New York City. It started then. And it spread across the country. This is 2018.
Yeah.
And so we're seeing the fruits of 6 years, 7 years of work. And see, sometimes we don't get it, that our activism does not necessarily work the next day. It may be years. But if you put the work in and the time and the commitment in, change will come. Change will happen. And even the Amazons of the world will have to change. And I know if Amazon mm-hmm. is here now, Walmart won't be far behind.
Target
won't be far behind. They'll have to do it. They'll put it in as a part of their corporate responsibility or their corporate image, because their image will be so damaged by paying their workers such a bad salary that people won't want to shop there because of how they're dealing their workers.
Yeah.
They'll put it in as a cost of doing business. Pay their workers a good figure, at least a living wage figure.
Now, let me ask, because Amazon, because Philly technically is still in the running for the other Amazon headquarters, does the fact that they've raised their minimum wage to $15 an hour make you feel a little less apprehensive about that, about the possibility?
You said it right, a little. A little. You know, I think, I mean, the phrase, first of all, is 15 and a union.
Yeah.
And so there's a reason for it. It's 15 and a union. That people need to have protection on the job. They need to have their security on the job. That people need to have pension. People need to have health care. People need to have know that if they're not late, if they're late for their job, they can get fired right away. They need protection. And there are some things just simply about human dignity that only a union can give you. To be treated fairly and to be respectful, be respected on the job.
Mm-hmm.
And so we say 15 and a union because we know the union will make sure those protections are in place. And so I would challenge Amazon. If their workers are not unionized, or all of their workers are not unionized, then they do the next step and make it 15 and a union. And then they sit down with that city, whatever that city is, and if it's Philadelphia, fine. And we negotiate with labor and community groups at the table a community benefits agreement that helps protect all of Philadelphia. We don't want Philadelphia workers displaced by Amazon, which is what the fear is. They'll come, and other workers, people will come to Philadelphia, and they'll displace the local Philadelphians who are here.
Mm-hmm.
We want to make sure that First Source Hiring, that they're hiring people here who are here now and are living in poverty now and need to get out of poverty. If they would to come here, we would insist on that.
You're such a radical. You're a radical.
Yeah.
You're a radical. 15 in a union. You leftist commie. I mean, next thing you're going to want, like, paid sick leave. What's wrong with you?
If 15 in a union is a commie, sign me up, man.
Hey, next you'll want straw with your bricks.
Okay.
Go old. Since we're in the Old Testament today, the Hebrew
old
Bible.
Testament.
Hey, all right. Hey, well, Reb, let me tell you, we got a nomination for your theme song. Your good friend and mine, Rabbi Sean, posted on Facebook. He said it should be "We Are the Champions." I don't know how you feel about that. I mean, I don't know.
We are the champions. That's That's an interesting one.
Yeah, that's what I thought. All right, Rabbi Shine, dig back in your playlist. All right, hey, Reverend Greg, man, appreciate you this morning. And, again, I like that. 15 is good, but a 15 and a union is better.
Yes, absolutely. And let's keep the pressure on. This is encouragement to keep the pressure on, not to let up and shake hands and congratulate, but all right, thank you. Now let's move on to what we need for everybody. And we need a 15 in a union and much more than even that. And Amazon and all of these corporations that have had record corporate profits this year, record corporate profits, but yet 40% of the people in this country don't even have affordable housing.
Wow.
There's much more that these corporations can do. And so it's not enough to be satisfied with what they've done here or what Amazon's done here. But applaud it, and let's move forward.
All right. That's the Reverend Greg Holster. Hey, thank you again always for your continued support of the program. You know, we got much love for Power, man. Have a great one, Reverend Greg.
Yes, thank you.
All right. I'm waiting till Friday, man. I'm waiting till Friday when I hear the results.
Mark Morial is calling at 8 a.m. on Friday, head of the Urban League. That's right. He's going to tell you what KKK is.
I went to graduate school with him, so yes, he's a good brother.
All right.
I'm waiting for the results.
All right.
All right.
Have a good one, man. All right. David Tattenhurst is probably right. He says on Facebook, Amazon is moving to 15 an hour to try to avoid unionization. David's also a part of Power. And, yeah, you're probably right. And so is that going to work? I don't think so. People are going to keep on fighting. You know, it's interesting, Denise. It took over 50 years to get to this 15 an hour. I say it all the time whenever I'm asked to speak at, you know, rallies and things of that nature, that what Dr. King and others marched for, they had those signs that said $2 an hour minimum wage. And the $2 an hour minimum wage, if adjusted for inflation from the mid-60s to now, is $15, give or take a few cents. So it took that long even to get to this place. There's a long gap between, you know, from that activism then and the current activism today, where nothing just seemed like it was happening publicly. So, again, you got to keep on pushing. I like that. 15 and a union. Now, listen, there is some breaking news that has great impact inside this studio. Mm-hmm. And for you as listeners, Nick Taliaferro, talking to you, Torna, Cherie and May, Ivory Kim, Andre, Donnie D, Sheila Booker, my cousin Sean in Oaktown. Yes, I'm talking to all of you all, Nick Nicholas and Monica, Rob and Lauren and Tawanda, our correspondent in Lancaster, and her mama, Wanda, Jazz McBride down in Chester, Bishop Peggy, Chauncey Bell, Asa Khalif Coalition. I got this breaking news from Asa Khalif, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
I'm telling you, you need to be sitting down and you listen to this. Lawrence Akins, what's up, Lance? Adrian in D.C., the show may not be the same after today. Travis, Littell, Michael Kane. I don't know. I don't know. Apparently, Wawa.
Mm-hmm.
Denise does not want to hear this, you all.
No, I already read that story.
Wawa and Sheetz, this famous rivalry. I thought the big rivalry was with Royal Farms, which is, I guess, a Maryland-based.
Royal Farms is a new player in the game.
Yeah.
They make good fried chicken, apparently.
Okay, well, if you tuned into our program, I don't know, twice or more, you will know that one of the staples on the show is that I have non-caffeinated fake coffee, and Denise cannot make it through the day without 24 ounces. There it is right there on Facebook Live. French vanilla coffee from Wawa, deeply caffeinated.
Yeah.
But Wawa, according to campaign records, has gone all partisan on us. They're contributing big to Scott Wagner's gubernatorial campaign.
Okay.
A man who stands against most things Denise believes in.
Now, is that the entire story or
well, Sheetz is given to Tom Wolf. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you probably would want this story to be opposite.
Well, no. I just think that...
How's that coffee taste now?
No, here's the thing. I think that the part that gets missed in this particular story is...
Fix it, Denise.
Well, no, I'm not trying to fix anything. I just want to know if it's just straight contributions or if it's people playing both sides.
I didn't see them give any money to Tom Wolf, because that's what corporations typically do. They're smart. Mm-hmm. They hedge their bets, right? Oh, mm-hmm. Governor Wolf, you're the greatest. Here's $10,000. Oh, Scott Wagner, man, you got a great chance. We can't stand Wolf. Here's $10,000. Mm-hmm. Then all of a sudden it comes out and both have given money. That's not the case here. Yeah, Raphael Suleiman, he's loving this. He's got all kind of smiley faces on there. Mm-hmm. Poor Donnie D loves Wawa.
But A, the coffee at Sheets sucks. And B, there's not a Sheets here. So,
Yes, Tomiko, another place to boycott. But what are y'all going to do? You better come to Dunkin'.
And Dunkin' sucks even worse than that.
No, are you kidding?
Oh, I'm sorry. Dunkin' sucks. I'm sorry.
Are you kidding? That's the thing I miss the most about drinking coffee,
Dunkin',
man. That small extra
sucks.
Extra.
Dunkin' sucks.
Well, you know what else sucks? Wawa giving money to Scott Wagner.
But
that's worse than Starbucks calling the cops on guys using the bathroom. That's corporate intent from the highest place.
But you know something? I'm kind of at the point where, you know, I'm not going to let your stupid decisions keep me from enjoying something that I enjoy. And okay. And Raphael, herbal tea? Seriously?
Come with me. Listen.
No, we don't do that.
My little company, they should pay me for my promos. My little company, Ticino, they've never been caught up in any kind of scandal. And they probably like just run their business out of a house somewhere in Seattle or Oregon. But you don't ever hear about the Ticino people. Ah, and it's so nice. Tastes just like coffee. No caffeine. Man, it's going to be some cranky people who can't go to Wawa, can't go to Starbucks. Those lines at Dunkin' are about to get long.
But Dunkin' sucks.
Yeah, they don't give money to Scott Wagner.
It doesn't matter. They probably give money to Donald Trump. Are you forgetting Dunkin's a national chain?
Oh, they. So Sandra Fields, I didn't see that in the story. Sandra Fields said they did give some to Tom Wolf. They gave $12,500 to Wagner, but how much to Tom Wolf? How much?
See, that's what happens when Cherry folks Greg only tell half the story.
Yeah, whatever.
You tell half the story, you mess up.
Whatever.
That's why I'm in an accuracy business.
It says they gave $12,500 to Scott Wagner and some money to help Tom Wolf too. Some is usually, you know, less than 1,000.
Oh, we have an article from Billy
Received,
Penn.
Yeah, I think it looks like they gave like about $1,000 or so. What did they give to Tom Wolf? Doesn't even say in here. And I don't have time to read it. Post it for me there, Sandra, if you have a chance to read through the whole story. How much did they give to Governor Wolf?
And you also got to remember that Wolf probably doesn't need a whole lot of money or doesn't even want a whole lot of money, because this is a dude that's giving his paycheck and his pension to charity.
Yeah.
His state stuff.
And dude,
because he's got his own.
And dude still drives that Jeep.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, my thing is this. You have to, you know, I understand that right now we're kind of in a, you know, let's boycott everything we don't agree with mode. And in some cases, I'm down with that. I haven't been in a Starbucks for real in months. And when I have been in there, it's because I'm meeting somebody. If folks really want people of color to not, you know, patronize any of these chains, mm-hmm. Y'all might want to throw a few $100,000 Mark Lamont Hill's way so that he can mass produce Uncle Bobby's.
Boom.
I'm just saying.
Hello. Yeah, and we're having fun. You know, I hear you, Sheila. It is verified. They gave money to Wagner. That's verified. They gave money to a lot of other people. Thanks, Sandra Fields. They gave it to some Democrats. They gave some money to Mary Gay Scanlon running in the 5th.
Now, here's the thing with Mary Gay Scanlon. the unions are not feeling her.
Okay, well, check this. They also gave money to both Senate, both guys in the Senate race, to Bob, to Lou Barletta, and to Bob Casey. But it just seems to me, if you're going to give $12,500 to Wagner, you should probably do the same for, you know, Wolf. Kind of smart to hedge your bet that way. In any event, we got to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about a much more serious topic, about the issue of breast cancer. And shout out to all the survivors at Mother Bethel this Sunday. If you're not doing anything, come on out at 9:30 a.m. The whole church will be awash in pink. We'll be lifting it up all month long. And listen, you know, got folk in our church now going through it. Some of you all have them in your families as well. So I want to keep those folk lifted up. We'll be right back after this short break.
WWDB Philadelphia, 860 AM.
You're listening to Mark and Denise in the Morning on 860 AM WWDB, a part of Beasley Media. Mark and Denise in the Morning is a product of Tyler Made Media, LLC.
All right, listen, we're back. This hour is brought to you by Power. Philadelphians organized to witness, empower, and rebuild. Learn more about Power at powerinterfaith.org. Again, thanks to Reverend Greg Holston as our guest this morning. And you all, come on, stand down. Do you not know me by now? Do you not understand sarcasm from me? First of all, there is no way that you would ever successfully have a boycott against Wawa in Pennsylvania. Ever. Starbucks, maybe. Maybe. And it didn't work too much. But
I was going to say, and even that.
People were sneaking in. They were like sneaking in. But I'm telling you right now, look, you will never stop people from going to get their hoagies and their little breakfast sandwiches and their dinner. There's some people who eat breakfast, lunch, and dinner at Wawa. Am I kidding?
No, and chances are they will be in an emergency room somewhere because all that is bad cholesterol.
Dan probably picks them up all the time with 911, don't you?
Right up the street. We live in that place.
I'm just saying. Oh, man.
I personally am not a fan of the sandwiches,
yeah.
But I mean the coffee.
Wawa could give $100,000 to Trump and people still go, yeah, that's kind of icky, but
well,
I'm sorry, man. I'm hooked.
Well, that's why I say
so easy to order.
Well, that's why I say if folks are really concerned about where the political contributions of the places that they patronize are going, and you see a business, I'm telling you, folks need to get together and hand Mark Lamont Hill a few $100,000 and say, you know something, we really like this Uncle Bobby's concept.
I'm with you.
Let's expand this. Put some books in people's hands, get them some good coffee that's not too expensive, and, you know, that you kill two birds with one stone. You give people coffee that, you know, they feel good about because it's also, you know, a chance for you to get some consciousness, and you get rid of the ignorance gap in this country by putting books in people's hands.
Mm-hmm.
And believe me, having had conversations with some of you, with some folks out there, particularly, you know, in the area of sexual assault and women over the last couple of weeks. Some of y'all have got the ignorance gap is widening with some of y'all.
What do you mean?
I'm just saying.
Just because the president said that it's a scary time for men.
See, this is what happens when you put a serial sexual assaulter in the White House.
You know?
This is what happens when you put a dude who feels empowered to treat women's private parts the same way you would a bowling ball in the White House. This is what you get. And, you know, when suddenly you hear about, you know, a whole bunch of men getting the Lorena Bobbitt treatment, look it up. Don't ask me to explain it to
Let's go to our guest now. changing the subject quickly.
That's probably a good idea.
I heard a gasp out of the sound room. I just kept mine to myself because I'm on air. But there was an internal, like, did she just say?
But hey, when you
don't ever call that woman's name,
when you hear about that happening, because women are starting to feel as scared as people, you know, feel when they feel attacked like that. I don't want to hear it.
Well, maybe if you go Lorena Bobbitt, then that Baptist preacher who said rape is not rape if you don't scream would believe it. Oh, you did what? I believe it. She was raped.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it. You fought back.
You got
Jeez. Listen, right now, I want to lift up the fact that the Pink Sister Chronicles, Volume 4, Book Gala, Perfectly Imperfect, will happen on tomorrow night, Thursday, October the 4th, 6 p.m. cocktail reception, 7 p.m. program, and 8 p.m. book signing. That's how you keep the program tight. And it's going to all happen at the African American Museum in Philadelphia, AMP, our own place, right there on 7th and Arch. Tickets are available, and we're actually fortunate enough to hear from some of the authors who will be presenting on tomorrow evening.
Yes, we have online right now, we have Dana McBride Garrett.
Good morning, Dana.
Good morning. How are you?
Fine. Yvonne Florence.
Good morning, Yvonne.
Good morning.
And Denise Butler.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, ladies. Glad to have you on Mark and Denise in the Mornings.
Hi. Thank you.
Thank you.
I know it's hard act to follow Lorena Bobbitt, but we'll try.
No.
Sorry about that. I had no idea she was going there. I would have never started talking.
So, I hate when my headphone decide they're going to pop out in the middle of what I'm trying to say. But tell us a little bit about Thursday night's event and, I guess, what people can expect when they come out.
Yeah, Yvonne, why don't you start?
Okay, so on tomorrow night is basically what people can expect is just a really awesome event. It's going to be uplifting. It's going to be inspiring. It's authors. We're breast cancer survivors. We have come through this journey on the other side, and we are just super excited that, you know, others who are going through the fight, you know, they can kind of look at us and know that it's not over when they tell you you have a diagnosis of breast cancer. You know, all of us, we just wanted to be that example. We wanted to share our story so that we could uplift others. And that's what tomorrow night is going to be about. It's going to be about uplifting others through our stories.
Okay. Now, did you all write, I guess, you're all authors, correct?
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Are your books specifically about your struggle and survival with breast cancer, or are they about, I mean, just like regular stuff like a romance novel or a biography?
Well, this is Denise. My story is about my whole journey, starting off right when I first found out, like, my symptoms, like, what happened to me, and then when I went to the doctor, and then when they took the test, and then when the doctor called me to say, yes, Ms. Butler, you have cancer, and it was like, okay, then my story just goes on from all the way up until now, like how I've been doing, what happened at work. So it's just me, you know, embracing imperfection.
Wow. Dana, what's your story about?
It's the same. I actually am a 12-year survivor, so I want, you know, people to be able to know that there is light at the end of the tunnel, and breast cancer isn't just to be celebrated in October. It's something that we live with every day, no matter how many years you have. Being a survivor is still something that you deal with on a daily basis, and it's important for people to understand and know that you're not alone and that there are people out here who's willing to assist you. And I think that's what Tracy's bio was all about, is helping those going through the process and those after the process.
Yeah.
Now, I know that back when I used to cover healthcare policy, We would do stories, you know, in October about breast cancer, and particularly breast cancer in African American women. And one of the statistics that used to that stood out for me, and it still kind of does, is when Black women are generally diagnosed with the disease, it's usually later in the process because, you know, we're caretakers, and we focus so much on making sure that everybody else is okay that sometimes we don't do what we need to do for ourselves. So I guess the question I wanted to ask is, you know, have you seen that yourselves in terms of, you know, when women, when particularly African American women get diagnosed? Because also what goes on, what connects to that is not only are we diagnosed later, but it's usually at a point where we usually succumb to the disease a little earlier.
That is true. And I found that to be the same with me because I am a caretaker. I have three children. I have three grandchildren, and I'm always taking care of them as long, you know, with my husband. But I did, I think I kind of, like, ignored the sign. So I did find a lump, and I found that lump. And I could say that lump has been there for maybe, I could say, about 6 to 9 months. And I didn't. I kept ignoring it, and then I think I waited, not saying too late, but then when I did find out, I was already at stage, I was at stage two, but it's not good, but it's not bad either, but it is something that's curable. So, you know, even though you can wait long, it can be, you know, it can be fixed because breast cancer is not, you know, some people look at breast cancer like, oh, I'm going to die. I did look at it that way, but now I don't look at it that way. Now you can live.
Yeah.
And this is Yvonne. And so, yeah, we do have women who are diagnosed at late stage with metastatic breast cancer, stage four. And, yes, you know, they find it at a late stage, again, like Denise said, because they're caregivers and they're, you know, taking care of their family. They're working. They're going to school. And so they're doing all these things. But we definitely want to change that dynamic. We cannot, you know, continue to allow women, African-American women, to be diagnosed at late stage and succumb to this disease because it is treatable. We just got to find it and be able to get them to the doctor. And so that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to promote that. Even in our stories, we talk about that. So, you know, yes, yeah, so, yeah, it does happen, unfortunately.
So, again, so people know exactly what we're talking about. This is we're not just talking about breast cancer, but we're also lifting this up because on tomorrow night, Thursday, October the 4th, beginning at 6 p.m. with a reception and a program to follow at the African American Museum in Philadelphia, there'll be a very powerful and moving program, the Pink Sister Chronicles. And this is volume 4. And it's actually, you can learn more about it and go to the website tracysbio.org, Tracy, T-R-A-C-I-S, bio, B-I-O, .org. And I guess there you can find out more about ticket information because it is a ticketed event. And shout out to the sponsor, Independent Blue Cross Foundation. This is an important event. Have any of you, and we'll go back with Yvonne first, have you ever been a part of something like this before?
No, actually, this is my first time really sharing my story in depth in a book, in a chapter. And it was very emotional, and it gave me a time to really kind of process a little bit more of what my journey has been from diagnosis into what I'm doing now. And I basically have become a patient advocate, a voice for other people who may be diagnosed with not only breast cancer, but all types of cancer.
Yeah, and Dana, what about you? Since you've been, you know, some people process this very privately and they don't want to talk about these kind of things, but, you know, the fact that you're willing to talk about your story and write about it, have other people who are going through it said to you that they appreciate you? I mean, how are people responding and reacting to you being open with your story?
I think people appreciate it. Being able to go through the journey, it is helpful to be able to help others process the journey because it is difficult. And it's very important for people to realize that you're not alone, you know, in the journey, and that there are other people that's willing to, you know, listen, and they can gain some inspiration from the stories that we share.
Yeah. So hey, Denise, one of our listeners who's on all the time, Sandra Fields, I didn't know this till today, said that she's a 14-year survivor and said that she, too, ignored the lump. What do you say to women? I mean, what word of advice would you have to women who are listening right now to, I don't know, I mean, if you just had a group of women like who have not gone through this, what would you tell them?
Oh, I would tell the woman, anytime you feel anything going on with your breast, like any symptoms that you have, don't wait around. Just go get yourself checked out. I'm really like an advocate of that. I want people to go to the doctors. They're here for a reason. They're here to help us. So let's go to the doctors and get yourself checked out.
All right. Well, listen, ladies, we want to thank you all for taking time to be here today and for writing your stories. And we hope that they will save someone's life down the road. And if you want to meet them in person, you can catch them at African American Museum in Philadelphia, 7th and Arch Street, tomorrow night beginning at 6 p.m. It is a ticketed event, but listen, the money goes to a good cause. Thank you, Yvonne Florence, Dana McBride, and Denise Butler.
You're welcome. Yes,
thank you all very much.
Thank you so much.
All right. Have a great day.
You too.
Bye-bye. Have a good one. Thank you.
Yep.
You're welcome.
Oh, boy, I tell you. You know, that's incredible. I mean, love the fact that they are using their story. And shout out to Tracy Smith, who's, I'm assuming this is, you know, her idea.
Mm-hmm.
Tracy's bio. You know, a lot of times people want to keep their stuff to themselves, but you never know the power in sharing your story.
And the thing is, when we deal with women's health in any capacity, be it breast cancer or endometriosis or anything like that, particularly with breast cancer itself, there's always a possibility of some sort of physical modification that you have to go through with that. And it's good that people are sharing their stories, because that way we can talk about how to handle some of those things. And, you know, and I also, you know, it goes back to one of my arguments that I occasionally have with people regarding Planned Parenthood. If you're a poor woman, or a woman that doesn't have health insurance or a lot of means or access to a health center, a lot of your OBGYN care, including mammograms, is coming from Planned Parenthood. Mm-hmm. There are some places in America where if it were not for Planned Parenthood, there would be no one doing women's health care. And yet, one of the favorite targets of our misguided friends on the right when it comes to women is Planned Parenthood. And that's because they think that basically Planned Parenthood is an abortion mill, which it is not. Abortion is just one of the many things that they do. And, you know, if you actually paid attention to everything that they do and didn't just get stuck on abortion, you would see that you could cut down the number of women who find themselves diagnosed with stage 4 breast cancer because they didn't have access to a mammogram. Or you could, you know, cut down the number of women who find themselves, you know, dealing with ovarian cancer when it's too late, because the thing about ovarian cancer is if you wait too long once it's diagnosed, chances are really, really good that you're, you know, it's already stage 4 and you're going to die. You know, but these are the kinds of things that women who don't have the means or access to other health care can get from going to Planned Parenthood. So, you know, how about instead of, you know, trying to get rid of this agency, that you actually start to look at everything it does and, you know, maybe throw some additional money its way?
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
I hear you. Wow. Man, great stories by those ladies. So if you can get there tomorrow night, go on out, support them, pick up the book as well. Yeah, tracysbio.org. Glad to see you. Oh, man, Mrs. Lett just logged on Facebook Live. Love the Facebook Live piece. You get to see who's listening. Man, you talking about, oh, my God. I have to get her on the show one day, Denise. She's the most incredible baker that you've ever met.
Oh.
Yeah. Maybe we could do some bartering. Bring some baked goods in. We'll promote your business, Miss Lett. I'm just saying. Cake, a pie. We're easy. Maybe one of the ones that just didn't work out right. Imperfect one. Give it to us. We'll handle it. And we'll shout you out.
So we take irregular baked goods.
We will. And we will eat them. Glad to see Ron Sigmund and Ron McCune, Anton Little and the Misses, the Littles out there. Mike Days, Philly.com. Glad to see all of y'all this morning. And Christopher Murray.
Yeah, he was.
Denise's other half.
He has a rare blood type. So he sent me a text message last night around 7 o'clock saying, oh, I'm at the Red Cross donating blood for my rare blood type.
Oh, is that right?
And I was like,
go ahead, frat.
Oh, that's nice.
That's how you do it. He's an alpha man.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, let's keep this conversation going. Someone who's in a fight for his life. Not really. He's actually, I mean, he's pretty much guaranteed he's going to just like stroll into office in November, soon to be a first time elected state representative in the state of Pennsylvania, a millennial up and coming. Glad to have him back on the program. One, Mr. Malcolm Kenyatta. Welcome back to Mark and Denise in the Mornings, Malcolm.
Thank you so much. Good morning. I'll push back because there's only one way to run for office, and that's to run scared. And so we're running hard for these last 34 days and taking it very seriously. But I will say, I will take a break to come in and get the pie and the cookies to help you guys with that.
Yeah, right. Everybody want to come.
I'm a public servant. I'm ready. I'm ready to help.
Yeah, everybody wants to get these like irregular baked goods.
Hey, Malcolm, I just saw on your Facebook post that you were interviewed by Philly.com about Alex Trebek's, what people are saying was a horrible outing as the moderator for the governor's debate. How bad was it? I didn't see it. I just saw the reviews.
So as I said in the piece, I did hear people's frustration with Alex Trebek, but as a kid that grew up watching Jeopardy almost every night, I can personally not speak ill of Alex Trebek.
You're not speaking ill of him, just his performance.
Listen, I'm not going to speak ill of Alex Trebek, but I will say that I thought that Alex Holly from Fox 29, that she would have been a great moderator. And so if they decide to, do another debate or if somebody else has a debate, I think she'd be a perfect person to have come do it.
Well, it's kind of ironic that you brought that up, because what I wanted to talk to you a little bit about is getting young people to the polls, you know, in November. And you can't have been inspired to want to go and vote for either Governor Wolf or Scott Wagner by watching this debate moderated by the host of Jeopardy. I mean, if that doesn't tell you, you know, how our politics have kind of become this really bad reality show, nothing tells you more than that. What I want to know is, what are you hearing from folks your age on the campaign trail about voting and whether or not they think it's important, whether they're going to vote?
Well, you know what? I think that one of the things that we're seeing, and we'll see how this translates on Election Day, but that I think I'm really heartened by, and our campaign has been working really hard at, is getting folks registered to vote. Here in Pennsylvania, we've seen the largest increase anywhere in the country of millennials registering to vote. Not to mention just, I think it was last week with National Voter Registration Day, a record-breaking 800,000 people just across the country registered to vote. And so I do see people being engaged and understanding the political process in a way that they haven't before, in large part because of the guy who, you know, came and was in the city yesterday. People are seeing what's happening and really having a bad reaction to that type of politics. And so I think that that helps to open the door to a broader conversation with young people, whether you are talking about college debt, right? And the fact that folks go to college and then you leave with debt that in some cases is the equivalent of one or two mortgages.
Yeah.
And so, you know, how do you start your life? When you talk about healthcare and the fact that it's cheaper to take a limousine to the hospital than it is in some cases to take an ambulance. I mean, these are just some of the things that on their face don't make sense and that affect young people acutely. And I do see them being engaged in a way I haven't seen before. I think in some ways the primary was like a bad barometer of this because of the fact that a lot of the students weren't on campus. And so you have this dual issue where some folks register on campus, some folks are registered at home. And so the primary was like an odd sort of time. But I think in the general election, students will be on campus. And I know that we are and other campaigns are working really hard to try to engage folks. And I see some anecdotal evidence that that is working. But we'll, you know, the proof will be in the pudding on November 6th.
Yeah, so have you seen this? There's a new app that some young people put out. I saw it on the news this morning. It's called Vote That John.
I have not heard about that, but I'm already in love.
Yeah, okay. I mean, it's a nice little app.
Vote That John.
Vote That John. Yeah, you know it came from Philly,
yeah,
obviously.
Yeah, right? D-A-T, right?
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, okay. But it's a creative attempt to do that. Well, so let me ask you this. Are you, how are millennials processing the Kavanaugh hearing? And is this something, I think he's going in regardless. They're going to force this and they're already kind of, they're creating their counter narrative to the fact that there really won't be a real investigation. They haven't even interviewed Dr. Blasey Ford. But is this something that millennials are talking about as another reason to want to go to the polls to have their voice heard when it comes this November 6th?
So I think a lot of people, and again, all this is anecdotal, but I think a lot of people weren't paying attention to the original hearings, like, of him.
Mm-hmm.
But there are so many people who I know watched Dr. Ford's testimony. I don't know if they watched the second part of, like, Kavanaugh's testimony, although if you watched Saturday Night Live, Matt Damon did a pretty good job of giving you the highlights. So I'm assuming a lot of folks saw it that way. But there were a lot of people that saw her testimony. And if you saw her testimony, if you watched this brave woman who was clearly in pain, who had to put another door on her house to deal with the PTSD, you know, that came from this assault, and then you hear our president do what he did last night and mock her at a rally and call her a liar and, you know, say that, you know, this is a horrible time to be a young white man in America. I mean, I think that they are sort of ready for this to go either way. And I think in some regards, Trump doesn't want him to get on the court. I think they want to, you know, get him on, obviously, if they can. But I think also Trump loves playing the aggrieved card, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so this idea that white men are under attack, which is like a farce. I would use a different language, but this is a radio show. You know, this is a farce, this idea that white men are under attack and it's a bad time, you know, to be a white man. I mean, it's just ridiculous. But it's that politics of grievance that Trump is tapping into. And if for whatever reason, he does not make it through to the Supreme Court, then that is a great rallying cry for Republicans who, you know, have not really, you know, been doing as strong in places where you would expect they would do well. I mean, Republicans are behind in the Tennessee Senate race. I mean, in Tennessee, Republicans are behind in the Florida governor's race. It's tied in Atlanta with Stacey Abrams. It's tied with Beto O'Rourke in Texas. And so I think that, you know, it would help him either way politically if Kavanaugh gets on or doesn't get on.
Mm-hmm.
And I just know that myself and so many other people watched, you know, with so much pain, the Blasey Ford testimony. And that was shocking for a lot of people. And I'm so proud of her, you know, for coming forward to do that, even though it might not ultimately change the result.
Yeah. All right. Well, Malcolm, you're already sounding like a politician.
Well, I hope public servant, but I'll take it.
Well, I actually
I didn't mean it as a negative, by the way. Well, I'm actually complimenting.
You know, like, politicians and lawyers get those in like two
I'm sorry.
Fields,
yeah, I didn't mean to cut you off, like, Denise, but I do want to be clear. It was actually a compliment that you're on top of the issues and you laid them out well. But I will use public servant going forward.
Thank you.
Well, you know, let's be honest here. While you are quote unquote running scared, the bottom line is you don't really have an opponent. And
we do. We have a Republican. We have a Republican opponent.
Okay.
Is, you know, a former. We have a Republican opponent.
See, we didn't even know that. Democrat. That's a shame.
Well, you know what I say? I say to folks, you know, if this was any, you know, Joe Schmo, Republican, fine. But this is a former Democrat. And so with that in mind, there are folks, you know, who still may have, you know, connections. And, you know, unfortunately, I mean, you all saw some of the, like, you know, nasty, you know, stuff that folks put out in the primary. And,
yeah.
And you know, thank God that is such a small minority of people that, you know, are bigoted and hateful. And that number is shrinking, I believe, as younger people grow up, because we see they don't feel the same way about these issues, thank God. But, there, you know, there is a contingent of folks. To be honest, we're working hard, you know, and we think that if you work hard and you mix in some faith with some work, I think that's the secret ingredient to making good things happen. But, you know, we're still understanding that until it is election night and you have the results, you know, you did not win. I remember primary night and results started coming in, and, you know, 10-15% in, and we were out by a little bit. My team's like, you won. I was like, listen, until I see at least 70%, I'm not saying anything. And so I'm always a little bit more cautious. And I think because of that, you know, I've tried to push my team and our volunteers to work as hard as we can, because it's not just about my race at this point. It's about Democrats up and down the ballot.
And that's
so
why I brought this up.
Walk in, you know?
And that's why I brought this up, because, you know, when people look at a political race of somebody that they know and that they intend to, and that they think, okay, well, I would have voted for this person. If they don't think that they have actual competition, there's not as much of a motivation to get out and vote. And that affects the entire ballot, not just that one race. So I guess, how are you encouraging people to, you know, look at the entire picture and not just at your seat?
Well, you know, what's really interesting, and it's unfortunate in some ways, that I believe a lot of these races have really been nationalized. And not to say that, like, local issues don't matter. People in my district very much care about the things that we're talking about in relation to the deep poverty, right? And dealing with it at a housing, education, and wage level. You know, folks are certainly tuned into that message. However, we also knock on doors and just let in folks know that we have a Republican, you know, opponent. They're like, okay, well, listen, you got my vote, right? And so it's just gotten very polarized in a way that's not great. In midterm elections, you know, generally, and I think even more so this cycle, are determined by who can get their folks out. And I think when folks recognize that Governor Wolf has a opponent who is, quite frankly, I mean, I don't know what is wrong with Scott Wagner. I don't know, like, what deep-seated problems, like, he has. But, like, he's off in terms of what he thinks should be going on in our body politic. And it's very clear he would be a radical governor if elected. And the same thing in my race and in other races, to remind folks that Republicans really have a radical ideology that is so far outside of the mainstream. This country has been governed for the last 2 years with only 32%, 34% at the high watermark of the people approving of the direction that we're going. So that means that there's, you know, 60-something percent of people that are not comfortable with the direction that we're going. And so that requires folks to get out and vote. And you've seen that from folks, you know, who are former Republicans who are saying, you know, on a national level, who are saying, listen, you know, I used to be a Republican. I've always been a Republican. But if we want to bring some sanity back to our body politic, mm-hmm. then we have to get out and vote. And because I do have, you know, if you look at the percentage, right, I probably have a strong likelihood of winning my race. I've also been going out and trying to help other candidates that are in, you know, more 50-50, 51-49 races to try to help those folks as well. And we have some great candidates, not only here in Philly, but right outside of the city in, you know, Bucks, Delaware, Chester County, who could also use the support of folks who are listening to Mark and Denise and are excited and fired up and want to help. It's definitely folks in the suburbs need your help. And so I just want to make that plug to folks that are running in elections in the suburbs.
All right. Well, Malcolm Kenyatta, best to you. And we'll talk to you on the other side of November 6th, if not sooner.
Thank you so much. And please don't forget to tell me about the cakes and cookies and pies. I would love to come. help you guys out.
Well, you have to bring Denise our Wawa coffee then.
When it's cakes and cookies and stuff, I tend to go with milk.
Okay.
Because that kind of
like. Even though Wawa is supporting Scott Wagner, I'll leave you guys with that.
Yeah.
I'm still a Wawa.
Yeah, we've had that
still
combo.
Still a Wawa fan. All right, guys. Have a great morning.
Have a good one, man. Oh, man. That's funny. So it's interesting. You know, we do have a chance to fix at least one wrong in Pennsylvania politics. I've been saying this literally on the air for the last 2 years, even before we started doing a morning show and I did the Friday night show back on 900, that I just cannot believe that out of 20 elected officials who are representing us in Congress, 18 House members, 2 U.S. senators, that we've gone this entire period of time since Alison Schwartz came out to run for governor. So it's actually been almost 4 years now. It has been 4 years. That for the last 4 years, there's been not one woman to represent us in Congress from the state of Pennsylvania.
I believe it.
And I keep saying, and I'm just wondering, where's the outrage? I don't understand how we've just gotten to the point now where you have women candidates who are probably going to make it in this time. But, I mean, that just, you know, and one black rep. We get the one black seat, the honorary seat. It's the Robert Nix seat. That's what we should call it. Who gets the Robert Nix seat next after Dwight Evans? What Negro is well-deserving? Certainly won't be a woman, Negro. What Negro male gets this seat? Like you can't have two out of Philly? Maybe one in the middle of the state? Maybe one out of Pittsburgh? Seriously, Democrats? Man, you guys are tripping. And I just wonder how, you know, I mean, look, I just got here 15 years ago. So I got to tell you, it's still shocking to me. Well, actually, in the city proper 10 years ago. It's pretty shocking to me. Mississippi has more women in their delegation than Pennsylvania. Let that sink in.
Well, there's a reason why they occasionally refer to this place as Pennsylvania.
Alabama has more. Let me just say it this way. Pretty much anybody that's got more than 5 or 6 delegates or representatives has more than Pennsylvania. And y'all are cool with that? Hey, man. Well, a lot of these women did vote for Trump.
Yes, you have to remember the 54%. Does exist.
You all did give Trump Pennsylvania, so I get it now.
And the thing is, when Lynn Yackel ran against Arlen Specter for Senate after the Anita Hill hearings, she lost, despite the fact that women were, like, mad about how Specter and Joe Biden had treated Anita Hill during those hearings. There are 7 women running for office for Congress and for statewide offices this time around. It'll be interesting in a state where people still don't want to, you know, discuss the fact that sexism played a pretty major role in Hillary Clinton's loss here. Folks don't want to discuss that.
No, they don't. I mean, of course they do.
So because they don't want to discuss that. The fact that, you know, we have no women in our delegation really shouldn't be a shock to anybody because, you know, Pennsylvania is sexist.
I continue to say.
Let's just keep it 100. So, Pennsylvania is sexist. So it is what it is.
When I meet my friends from other states And they say, man, I can't believe you all let him flip Pennsylvania. I say, he didn't flip Pennsylvania. I said, we had two women that were running. Mm-hmm. One for the U.S. Senate. She was the first woman to represent the Democrats.
And as the a fact woman. That Katie McGinty is not a senator.
Yeah.
With, you know, whoever decided that it was better to either stay home mm-hmm. or not vote at all and not vote for her. And she should be governor right now.
Well,
in all seriousness, because I remember covering that gubernatorial campaign, and while Tom Wolf ended up emerging as the Democratic nominee from that, with a little more money and a little more time, Katie McGinty would have been the Democratic nominee, and she'd have made a really good governor. She had a lot of really great ideas.
So right, so you had Katie McGinty and Hillary Clinton. Top of the ticket, and they lost by similar margins, right?
Mm-hmm.
They lost by almost, it's weird how they lost by almost the same vote count. And then the three male Democrats who ran, Josh Shapiro as attorney general, the state treasurer, and the state controller, the three of them running also in a statewide race won easily
mm-hmm.
by almost the same margin.
Mm-hmm.
So, the state did not turn purple or red. The state stayed blue. But there was a large segment of people that, so if you take out, oh, well, Hillary was this, she was that, you can't trust her, lock her up, lock her up, lock her up. Okay, great. Then why did Katie McGinty lose too by the same margin? Because there is a population here that believes, that brings me to this point, Steve Bannon, Trump's boy. Or Steve Bannon might say Trump is his boy. I don't know.
Well, He's also proof that good skincare, can be canceled out by abject racism. But I digress.
I don't know where to go now. Steve Bannon is now it's been reported out in Joshua Green's new book, "The Devil's Bargain" or "Devil's Bargain."
Speaking of which.
He says that Bannon, this is what he says. The anti-patriarchy movement is going to undo 10,000 years of recorded history. You watch. The time has come. Women are going to take charge of society, and they couldn't juxtapose a better villain than Trump. He is the patriarch. So apparently he's not feeling this Me Too moment. I mean, I guess because women want to get paid for the same amount of money for doing the same job is somehow, I don't know, an attack on masculinity.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, isn't there like a vested, I mean, let's just stop for a moment. Doesn't that help your own household? You're okay with like, so your spouse goes in, she works in an office with a guy, and the only difference in their pay is like their body parts. So God gave one set of body parts, another set of body parts, and therefore she gets less money for doing the exact same work as her coworker. But somehow you're good with that because, I don't know, you're that vested into patriarchy?
Sometimes the thing about patriarchy, as it is with all other That's prejudices stupid. And things like that, is it obvious it sometimes leads to people cutting their noses off despite their faces.
Yeah, I mean.
And nowhere is that more prevalent or more obvious than when you look at something like equal pay. Because if everybody is paid equally for equal work,
mm-hmm.
that means everybody can better contribute economically to your household. You're not trying to make ends meet almost entirely by yourself, and neither is the other person. You're pulling all of your money together, and if you're both making an equitable wage, that's more money that you can pull together, and you can do things like buy a house or remodel your house, put money aside for your children to go to school, you can keep your bills up, you can plan vacations, you can actually, you can actually take the whole family to Europe for the summer because everybody's got some, you know, money saved up.
And then there's the part that is just the fact that it's just right. How about that?
Right.
How about the fact that it's just right?
There's that whole equity thing, too, I mean, where, you know, no one feels like their work is diminished or no one feels like their work is discounted because everybody's getting compensated for what they do equally. And let's face it, the days of, you know, men need to be paid more because they're breadwinners. First of all, that was never actually the case. You know, if we were honest with ourselves, I mean, you had the myth of the stay-at-home mom, but in communities of color, that was never really, you know, what existed. I mean, my mom always worked. And
mine did too.
You know, and that's thing. So, you know, when we look at, you know, that particular branch of the patriarchy, that never made any sense. And yet you still have women of color who were paid less than their husbands, who were being paid less than white men, but it was still, you know, less.
And here's the problem with this attitude. Oh, that we could say this is just Steve Bannon and white male Republicans who feel this way. Mm-hmm. Or white male Democrats in Pennsylvania who don't want to give up any of these seats. Oh, that we could say it's just them and it ain't us. Mm-hmm. I was at an AME meeting once. And so this is because it's all in the church and I'm not singling us out as though somehow you Baptists are any different or you Pentecostals are any different or you non-denominational denominations. That's the new denomination. You know, Denise, I don't go to a denominational church. Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Non-denominational. You're the new denomination. Even in the church, and I don't care what denomination you are. Black Catholic, Black Methodist, Black Baptist, Black Holiness, it's there too. I will never forget 2004, and I'm just kind of like a, you know, who am I, Rudy Poot in the AME Church. Still kind of, some people probably say, you're still a Rudy Poot.
What is, do I want to know what that is?
You never heard that term before?
No.
It's like, just like, you're a runt, nobody yet.
Okay.
That's, it's a West Coast term, obviously. You old Rudy Poot. You never said that?
No.
Dan, you never heard that either? Rudy Poot? You never heard that? Wow, man. I'm sorry. It's my West Coast bias, you know. So all of you just learned a new word.
We have all learned a new word.
West Coast people are like, they never heard Rudy Poot? I bet you say soda instead of pop. So I'm sitting in this meeting. Not even a meeting. It's just kind of a lunch after the election of bishops. We elected two more bishops. In 2000, we made history in our church, and we elected Bishop Vashti McKenzie, the first woman bishop. So a lot of people felt like, all right, we're giving women something. 4 years later, who saw this coming? Two more women. Bishop Sarah Davis, who's passed on now, and Bishop Carolyn Tyler Guidry. So, oh, man, you started seeing the Steve Bannons come out. Women going to take over this church. You just watch and see. And I'll never forget, I was standing next to a retired person, one of the higher ups, who was retiring very soon. And he said to another older clergy person, he said, man, I'm glad I'm retiring. Y'all can have this. In other words, Denise, I'd rather retire than let a woman tell me what to do in the church. Mm-hmm. I'd rather be retired than to be in this kind of a church where women get to lead. I'm like, are you?
No.
Now, mind you.
He wasn't getting.
You know, like, two more women elected bishop. Glad I'll be out of here. Y'all can have this church. I don't recognize it anymore. I mean, it's not just old white Republican men. It's not just old white Democrats. It's a problem throughout society. It's not just black church folk. It's everywhere. It's like Saudi Arabia saying women can't drive until recently. Can't drive. You too emotional to drive, lady? You're going to have like a, I don't know, what's going to, something going to happen while you're driving? I mean, come on, man, get over it. What's up, Carmi Woods, Kansas City?
All you needed for proof of how far we have not progressed.
That's 04.
In all aspects of how we, you know, of how. And the thing is, I'm disappointed when men do that, period. But I'm even more disappointed when it's men of color, because quite frankly, you go through it in everyday society, just walking around in your own skin. For you to come home and want to, you know, inflict that on us, it's just not cool. And nowhere did I, you know, feel that way more than with the whole Bill Cosby thing. Like, I will continue to say this until you, you know, kind of look at yourselves and say, okay, I'm going to do better. Many of you told on yourselves when the Cosby sentencing was announced. You told on yourselves when the verdict was announced. Many of you let me know exactly who you were, and you don't ever have to worry about me sitting a drink down in front of you ever again. In fact, I may not drink in your presence unless I bring my own drink, because what you showed me is that you thought that because this was a black man and the criminal justice system is bad, that it was okay for him to drug and rape women. And that's not cool.
But the trial was flawed. But the stuff was sealed. They weren't supposed to unseal the deposition. They said he gave quaaludes to take advantage and have sex with women.
And the thing is,
but that's wrong,
if
Denise.
You're going to put yourself out there as this moral arbiter and tell people to pull their pants up and stop, you know, naming their children African names, if you're going to do that, you know, if you're going to grab that bull, you're going to get the horns. And that's exactly what he got. He got the horns. And the thing is, if you want to put yourself out there as this moral arbiter, fine. But don't have a transcript from a deposition that you gave floating around talking about your love of, you know, illegally acquired quaaludes.
So, may I address Raphael's question on Facebook?
Before
we get out of here. Raphael Suleiman. I love Raphael Suleiman because he just throws, you know, some folk toss us softballs. He's always like throwing heat, 105 mile an hour fastballs every day. He said, speaking of that conversation we were just having about folk in the church not wanting to have women lead them, it's okay for women to give their money to come and serve, to keep the church flowing. Fill up the pews, do Women's Day, bring in that big offering at the end of the year, help you pay your bills. But don't you think about leading. So Raphael says, does Paul's teachings about the role of women in the church count, Reverend Tyler? That is what the conservative Christians go by today. Not just the conservatives. You'd be surprised. Here's what's funny to me. When I hear that argument from Mabel, I can't go into what white conservatives think about that, because what I'm about to say really only makes sense to me in a black context, given our history here. So Denise, you know what is also attributed to the Apostle Paul? And this is kind of questionable because the letters of Paul, not all of them were written by Paul, but that's a different conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Not to discredit them, but it's just it's the way in which letters were written in the name of their mentors and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, what letters written in Paul's name also say, in addition to women should not, you know, be over men in the church,
mm-hmm.
also says slaves should be obedient to their master. Well, that was contextual, Denise.
No.
You got to put that in the context.
Then why is it that's contextual, but the fact that I can't lead is straightforward?
Because that supports my bigoted idea. Of course. You don't understand that?
Okay.
This is context. That's the word of God.
Mm-hmm.
The word of God says that you can't speak to men in the church and lead them. But Paul, he didn't mean slavery, because of course I'm not going back on the plantation.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that ignorant?
I have found that all isms like racism or sexism or misogyny or any of those things, I found that all of those things are based in ignorance.
Pretty much.
That without ignorance, they don't survive.
Pretty much.
And because of that, you know, I combat them at every turn. Most of the time, just with my mere presence.
Well, and if you're wondering how we got to this, going back earlier in the first half of the show, which, by the way, you can pick up on iTunes for free. Mm-hmm. Look for Mark and Denise in the Mornings or come back here, WWDBAM.com, and get the podcast at the end of the show. Man, Dan and Mike are so fast. Before we can pack up and get out of here, it's already the podcast is up. So you can listen to it or just come back to the Facebook live stream. Thanks to Zuckerberg. We just leave him up there. I don't know where he gets all these gigabytes, but that's another conversation.
Gigabytes are us.
Yeah, Toys R Us is coming back,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, I'm happy
Jeffrey's coming back. But, yeah, so we were talking about this conservative white preacher who was trying to make the argument that the Bible says that if a woman doesn't yell while being raped, then it wasn't rape, and she should be stoned to death because she didn't protest enough.
First of all, if you think you're going to stone anybody in 2018, I wish you luck with that.
Yeah, you'll get shot first.
Yeah, you'll get shot first, and plus they don't make stones that big no more.
Hey, because you know what else women can do? They can get concealed carry permits now.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're picking your stone up, she's going in her purse, pulling out that nine.
Or worse yet, she's got her breast holster.
Oh.
Yes.
A what?
They have a holster, like a bra holster.
No, I've seen them put money in the bra.
No, they have bra holsters.
I have seen that a lot. Della Reese always put her money in the bra, but they put guns in the bra now?
Bra holster. Although,
that's
the day
okay.
I put
Let's just move on.
A gun that close to that part of my body.
There's no way this could go well for us.
Sometimes it doesn't go very well at all.
Yeah. That mm-hmm. this conversation can only go in the wrong direction.
Yeah.
But yes, so you can't stone women today because they will shoot you.
But here's the thing. Here is what I don't understand, as we constantly find ourselves talking about sexual assault as a topic over the last few weeks in particular. What I don't understand is why isn't anyone saying the following? Hey, men, boys, don't go around raping people.
A lot of us say that.
But that's not the, everybody's got an excuse for why we need to overlook certain things, like either the justice system is flawed or he was only 17 or boys will be boys or any number of things. Or women need to be told not to walk by themselves in certain places or not to wear certain clothing or not to do certain things. How about if you just say, those of you who are out there raising boys, treat women with respect and don't rape them. Don't sexually assault them. Don't catcall them. And if you see somebody doing any of those things, I will pay your bail if you knock them out.
No, wait a minute. All right, folks. Now, I have to go back to our thing that starts the show. The views expressed on this program don't necessarily represent the station or this show. That's Denise. We will not pay your bills if you go knock somebody out.
Well, no, I don't mean me. I mean, like, as a parent, you say to your son, if you get in trouble because you're stopping one of your fellow male travelers from doing something illegal, disgusting, or just plain wrong to a woman, I'll come get you for that.
Just tell him to speak up, Denise. That's enough. Speak up, bro. Well, step to your boy.
Step to your boy. You know, when you tell your boy, hey, stop doing that, he may take a swing at you.
Because I'm going to tell you, we'll be walking out of here one morning, you can just serve some papers like, yes, this is my receipt. I did what you said. All right. That's all we have for today, folks. Thanks to our guest. Thanks to Dan for holding all this down. Thank you, Leslie, for our social media interaction. Thanks to all of you. And Lord willing, the creek don't rise. We're back tomorrow. We're out.
Have a good day, everybody.